Welcome to the OnFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on global economic developments. This is the Ahead of the ECB series. My name is Danai Kyriakopoulou. I'm Chief Economist and Director of Research at OnFIF, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Fred Ducrozet, Global Strategist at Pictet Wealth Management, joining us from Geneva today. And we'll be talking about the European Central Bank, who is now under new management with Christine Lagarde joining as its president last month. Welcome, Fred. So what are your first impressions from Madame Lagarde taking the helm of the euro area's central bank?
I think this impression that a lot is going on right now. We are in the middle of a transition. I mean, Christine Lagarde obviously took over officially on the 1st of November, but there's a lot that she still needs to decide, explain, communicate, and obviously we are heading to the first press conference. To which extent the difference in style with President Draghi is obvious. I think it's been very obvious already in social media. We're all talking about this tweet that she posted with the Governing Council offsite seminar in Germany. There's already a lot of differences, but also a lot of uncertainty. And that's what I mean. There's a lot of going on. We will talk about the strategy review. We'll talk about what the ECB could or could not do in the near future, the staff, the macro situation. So the market will be keen to hear from her in details what she thinks and what she expects over the next few months, I guess.
So you think communication will be a big difference in style with Draghi? And we've seen that already a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why do you think communication will be different under Lagarde?
In general, communication from central banks can be sometimes lost in translation, in subtleties. So there can be differences, but there is what Jean-Claude Trichet used to call constructive ambiguity. It's good to be ambiguous. It's good not to be perfectly clear, or back to Alan Greenspan's quote as well, because as a central bank, you don't want to commit too much. You want to be flexible. You want to remain data dependent. So on that note, I would say, I mean, there will always be a bit of uncertainty coming with communication and perhaps even some policy mistakes that can happen.
And one of the things that she said also in her hearing in the European Parliament was that she wants to emphasize also communication, not just to the markets, but also to the public in terms of understanding the ECB and the value that it adds to the euro system. In your view, as a market participant, as an ECB watcher, do you think that that focus will retract from the importance of the markets in the communication strategies of the ECB? Do you think that the changes that we will see there in emphasizing other communication channels will, how do you think this will be taken from market watchers?
That's precisely my point. I think one big difference is already clear from Christine Lagarde's communication that she wants to reach out to the broader public, perhaps also in simple terms. And obviously, there's a positive coming with that. I mean, it's always good to explain monetary policy to the public. I was about to say to the German public in particular.
Someone from the Governing Council told us that she's learning German, in fact, although maybe she should also learn Dutch. We'll have to see.
That's very correct. Yes, she seems to have a German teacher, but one step at a time. I guess the German and Dutch languages are not easy for French-speaking people at the beginning. What I want to say is that there is a clear positive with this kind of communication, because we need more explainers. But it's also double-edged sword to some extent. And that's something that Mario Draghi warned, I think, us against at his last press conference, saying that, yes, it's good to reach out to the public, but also to keep, you know, this kind of expertise and high-level thinking process that is also a natural part of the central bank policy making process. By that, I mean that if you get too simple, you might as well get your message, again, lost in translation. Monetary policy is a complex topic. And if you just focus on negative rates, for instance, it's difficult to explain how it works, how it makes winners and losers in Germany and beyond. So you shouldn't give the impression that it's all simple. It's just a matter of pedagogy, communication, videos, and explainers on the ECB website. By the way, the ECB is doing this already. So I don't think there is a need to improve the ECB's communication dramatically. It's more a question of style. And if Christine Lagarde goes on German TV and learns German and explains what the ECB has been doing in German to the German public, then even better.
Yes, absolutely. And it's good to focus on that because, yes, the ECB is already doing a lot on different mediums. You mentioned the different features on the website, also social media. It has an Instagram account, a Twitter account, which is the OMFIF research we published on that in June showed is one of the most followed central banks globally. And Christine Lagarde is also personal account, has a lot of followers, unlike a lot of the governors of the national central banks. But aside from communication externally, what about communication internally, because the way decisions were made, a more consensus-driven approach is something that has been said a lot about her approach at the IMF. Do you think there will be differences there from Draghi? And do you think this is the right approach for the ECB? I mean, Draghi's decisiveness certainly supported quick and decisive decision-making at the time when the euro area was in crisis. Do you think a different leadership style, communication style internally will suit the ECB at this stage?
Yes, obviously, if only because the cohesion of the governing council is a necessary condition for the credibility of its action.
Do you think we would have got the same decisive action in the time of the crisis if that approach was there then?
I think the situation makes the man or the woman to a large extent, and obviously Draghi has a different style. I mean, he doesn't endorse the same kind of communication as Lagarde does, but on the other hand, he had to deal with a permanent state of crisis in the euro area. So I'm not saying he didn't have the time to reach out to the public, but it's also part of the explanation. I mean, when you have to find new crisis measures every weekend because there is another fire coming out from Greece, Italy, or elsewhere in markets, you don't have time to sit back and relax and communicate. Also, I mean, a matter of the circumstances. With Lagarde, she's been lucky so far, and I think luck is part, I mean, is a key factor also to be successful as a central banker, in terms of timing, at least, because there seems to be this kind of tentative improvement in the macro outlook, stabilization at the very least in the euro area, and inflation is gradually creeping higher in terms of core metrics at least. This will buy Lagarde more time to conduct the review, obviously, but also to try and restore the cohesion and trust within the governing council. If a decision has to be made next year, I suspect it will still be easing in terms of monetary policy stance. And if it comes to that, then you might as well have a united governing council to back the decision.
And so what do you expect from the upcoming meeting and press conference, and then looking out to, as you said, on a more easing path in 2020, just put a little bit more color around that general statement of continuing on the easing path, because we spoke about the differences in communication styles, perhaps, but what about policy? What should we expect from Lagarde in that front?
I guess everyone expects continuity, and we do as well, and Lagarde has been very clear about that already, that she endorsed the previous decisions, the result of the accounts, what we've seen in the accounts of the last minute. And in a nutshell, I would say that the monetary policy stance is still appropriate. She will repeat that, also probably standing ready to use all instruments if needed, in other words, to with an easing bias that will remain. So first, continuity. Second, I would say, again, a bit of luck, but that's a fact. The staff projections, macro GDP inflation, core inflation projections will remain broadly unchanged, in my opinion, if not slightly higher, at least on some forecast points and metrics. And this would be the first time in 18 months since actually the QE tapering, the end of QE was announced in the middle of last year. And that it could be an okayish signal, but something at least that Lagarde will reaffirm. We are still confident that the ECB is on the right path. And last but not least, of course, be more specific about the review, not about the content of the strategy review, because it has not yet started, but perhaps in terms of the schedule, maybe even a bit more details about the scope of the review and what to expect from the ECB next year.
Let's talk about the review, because what do you think, first of all, of the timing of the decision to even have a strategic review now? You described that she has been lucky in terms of timing, that inflation is edging up, that there is no crisis at the moment, recovery is still ongoing. At the same time, a former executive board member of the ECB said to us recently that, quote, you don't do a review when the things are not going well, end quotes, and the belief was that the recovery is still fragile. It may not be an appropriate time to do a review now. What is your view around that?
I think the timing is absolutely great. It's perfect to have this review. We've been saying 16 years since the previous one, the world has changed. The financial markets, the degree of integration in the euro area, all the unconventional policy measures that the ECB has been implementing over the past few years, this is changing the framework within which the ECB is conducting monetary policy, and this has to be officialized at the very least. Take an example that's always my favorite one. Since October 2008, for more than 11 years now, the ECB has been refinancing commercial banks with full allotment, unlimited liquidity amount. And this is no longer a temporary feature of the liquidity framework. This is a permanent one to a very large extent, especially as the TLTRO, for instance, will continue for several years. This has to be institutionalized, I would say, probably within the review. Mm-hmm. The timing is perfect. The rationale is very strong. What will come out of this is much more uncertain, because to me, it will be a matter of evolution, no revolution. If you want to make compromises, if you want to reach a very broad consensus in terms of the conclusion of the review, it's very difficult to see radical changes. So might be a bit of a disappointment down the road, but at the very least, it's a necessary step and process to go through.
Well, let's be a bit more specific. What do you expect from the review in terms of the monetary policy mandate of the central bank, the interpretation of the close to but below 2% inflation target? There's been various calls to revisit that. There will be a lot of pressure on Christine Lagarde from various voices within the governing council, and it will be interesting to see how she manages that. And thinking back to what we spoke about in the beginning in terms of consensus building and taking into account different voices within the diversity of the euro system, do you think we will see something there from the review?
Yes, I do. Having said that, that it will be difficult to make radical changes, you still need to come up with something. You don't spend several months and hundreds of pages of reports and research to say nothing in the end. I mean, obviously, you have to make a decision and reach a consensus. Two main topics, in my opinion. First, the inflation target and the measures of inflation, the way to better account for inflation developments. And second, the tools and their side effects. And in both cases, I would expect compromises. So there might be a bit here and there for both doves and oaks. On inflation target, yes, I think it's been clear with Draghi, but also many other members of the governing council, that the ECB is heading towards a more perhaps simple 2% target and a symmetric 2% target with quite significant potential consequences for monetary policy. But at least the very idea of simplicity to me is very seducing and very attractive. How you measure that, what you do with that, might be a bit more of a debate. Whether the ECB moves even further to a core inflation target looks more debatable to me, because that's really in the EU treaty in terms of headline inflation as well to some extent. So there might be some different levels of understanding there, but at least on the target, I think it should be very clear. And that's a dovish change. There is no debate about that. But on the other hand, with the tools, with their side effects, with what the ECB could do in the future with its balance sheet, with the tiering system, with the liquidity provision measures, yes, there could be other concessions and hawkish concessions at the end of the review. We'll see if the ECB opens the debate to all those measures, but I think they will.
So a compromise between the hawks and the doves, the usual ECB difficult balance to strike for Lagarde's review. What about other considerations for central banks? So there have been some reports about the strategic review potentially including some aspects of the role of central banks in tackling the climate risks to the financial system. The ECB is a member of the network for greening the financial system that central banks and regulators have set up to study how climate risk can be a source of financial stability risk. We've also heard some more skeptical views. Former ECB Vice President Victor Constancio was tweeting this month about the potential for central banks being very limited in terms of what they can do in that agenda. So what is your view on that? Do you think we'll see something on that in the review, or is it attracting a disproportionate attention? We are also here during the week of the COP25 in Madrid, so climate is very much on everyone's mind and has been this year. Do you think this is something that the ECB will get more into?
Climate risks are on everyone's mind, and rightly so. There is absolutely no discussion, in my opinion, that it's the biggest challenge ever that we are facing over the next few years and decades. I do, however, agree with Victor Constancio's comments that it would be risky, once again, for the past 10 years, it's been the case on most politically sensitive topics, to put all the burden on the central bank. The ECB in particular will be more than happy to do that, what they've been doing for many, many years, financing the European Investment Bank, financing any kind of big Green Deal project that would come up from the European Commission budget, buying those institutions debt securities, as they've been doing. I personally, at least, I'm a bit more uncomfortable with anything that would be more proactive. For instance, if you change the collateral framework, the haircuts that the ECB is applying on green bonds to really, you know, create even stronger incentives for corporates, banks, and other institutions to issue such bonds, you might actually end up in a less optimal market configuration where you don't set the right incentives for this kind of equilibrium to be reached, because, I mean, it's been widely described in literature. For that, you need the regulation, the right incentives, the public institutions to contribute. And I would say even more broadly, to me, that's such an important topic that it has to be backed by a democratic decision, by elected governments and institutions. And you cannot complain on the one hand that the central bank is independent and in a maybe opaque and technocratic institution, and at the same time ask them to do everything that you can't do on your own as a government. So I'm a bit uncomfortable with the topic, not to dismiss it or to downplay the importance of it. I think it's the most important of all, but I don't think that the ECB should be once again the scapegoat for anything that the government or the European institutions are failing to do on our behalf.
Certainly, we've seen the risks from the ECB and other central banks being the only game in town on monetary policy materializing in terms of threats to their independence, etc., and becoming the only game in town for climate would only intensify those risks. On the other hand, you can say that the governments have already acted by signing the Paris Agreement. This is a very significant commitment that many governments have made, and so the central banks are only aligning themselves with those goals that have been political decisions by democratically elected governments. Yes. To say this is what we are committing to, and if you take that as a given, then as an institution that has a certain set of instruments that are very powerful at its disposal, it makes no sense to not be aligned with those.
Yes, I fully agree with you. So that's why those instruments can still be improved. And that's what, for instance, the new joiner of the executive board have said already, Fabio Panetta and Isabel Schnabel, in their own words, that you could, for instance, improve the pricing models of climate risk, whether it's on the macro side, on the rating side. You could go even further in terms of developing your own internal models, even though the big credit rating agencies will also include climate risk in their models. But you could go further. You could perhaps not, I would say, favor a certain type of bonds, but at least exclude the brown type of assets from some operation. You could do some things, and I think this will be part of the review. I'm just saying that going one step further in terms of a more proactive political strategy, if I may, that may be a bit risky and could backfire with the ECB.
No, absolutely. And anything to add on the review? Anything else apart from the monetary policy framework, climate change? What else should we expect to see from it?
As you said, I mean, it will be a balancing act. It has to be something that everyone agrees with, or at least recognizes that the result of their work. I think back to negative rates, rightly or wrongly, this is something that is attracting probably too much attention at the moment, but I can understand why. And this, to me, would be a very symbolic success of the review if the ECB comes up with a very clear position on negative rates. What I mean by that is that we've been hearing, and we hear again from the ECB, that negative rate is a good policy, that positives outweigh the negatives, but you also get the impression below the surface that more and more governing council members are getting uncomfortable with the current situation. With one exception, the chief economist, Philippe Lane, is still defending the policy very much. So if we would benefit from clarity in terms of, you know, where the reversal rate stands, how much the ECB could cut if they had to, under which contingencies, et cetera, et cetera. And on the other hand, perhaps starting to describe a possible exit strategy from negative rates. It's a bit of a taboo word, but let's face it, that the key topic, whether the ECB will, for instance, in the future, try to get back to zero, at least, like the Riksbank is likely to do in December, or whether they will keep interest rates there for very, very long and play with the tiering exemption threshold, for instance, the multiplier of the reserve. I'm not sure that the review will be that specific, but I'm sure that market will be waiting for such kind of conclusions and policy guidance.
It's good that you bring up negative rates. You're right that it has attracted a lot of attention. We're seeing more and more ECB speeches on that. Of course, it's also a matter of communication. And Christine Lagarde, in her parliament hearing, said, well, depositors and savers are also workers, in some cases also borrowers. So the environment that accommodative monetary policy has supported has been beneficial to them as well. So it's a question of exploring what the reality is, what the effects have been. And you mentioned Philip Lane's position. We also, as you referred to earlier, have two new members joining the executive board, Isabel Schnabel and Fabio Panetta. So their views will also be important there. But overall, yes, we will all be looking forward to the review. Monetary policy, climate change, communication, a lot of things on the agenda for Christine Lagarde as she's now on her second month as president of the ECB. Thank you very much for joining us today, Fred. We could have gone on so many issues to discuss on the ECB in the broader euro area context, and we look forward to you joining us on a future occasion as well in this Ahead of the ECB series. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us on this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the episode, and please do leave us a review.